Long ago, publishers built the first global networks, even if they didn't call them that. They were bookstores and warehouses. Publishing in 2015 still relies on interlocking networks and exchanges, but they are virtual and digital. Copyright Clearance Center is very happy to welcome you today for a special webinar that will help you identify markets and technologies to maximize the reach and return from your rights inventory. Rights are the essential links in the new distribution networks. Which rights are most prized? Which markets are on the rise? Will demand for digital products make print extinct? What does it take to keep you safe from piracy? Books have always connected authors and audiences in a complex web of intellects and ideas. Today, nothing has changed and everything has changed, and we look forward to helping you unravel the story of what it takes for successful worldwide management of subsidiary rights. We're going to sort of go through the basics of a rights portfolio audit, and then we will discuss some of the 21st century solutions that are available today, relying upon technology, but making the point that subsidiary rights remains very much a personal business. And so with all of that, I want to turn to Randy Pettway. Randy Pettway at Publishing Technology, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you.
Well, Randy Pettway, we're glad to have you join us. Randy Pettway is Executive Vice President, Global Product Strategy for Publishing Technology. Randy leads strategic development for Publishing Technology's enterprise and digital publishing solutions, including Advance, Pub2Web, and Ingenta Connect. Jointly operating from Europe in Oxford, the UK, and North America with offices in Boston and Somerset, New Jersey, Publishing Technology was formed in 2007 following the merger of Ingenta, Vista, and Publishers Communications Group, and is listed on the alternative investment market of the London Stock Exchange. Publishing Technology also operates locally in Brazil, India, China, and Australia, so very much a global perspective from your office there in Somerset, New Jersey, Randy, and we're delighted that you can join us today because you have written and spoken about the issues surrounding subsidiary rights and just the importance, the increasing importance of intellectual property rights for publishers around the world. And a point that you have made is this is a global challenge, but one that is finally getting the attention it deserves.
Yes, certainly. I think that we're in a time where a number of things have converged. We've got the shift to digital, as you mentioned in the introduction. We have the fact that the world is getting smaller every day, and borders in a lot of ways in terms of how we conduct commerce and how we utilize content. Certainly, borders are starting to shift, and expectations of users and consumers of content are starting to shift. And I think all of those things have converged to create a situation where rights now more than ever are or should be a focus of publishers and really any type of organization that creates content.
Right, because in the past, Randy, I think it was true that subsidiary rights sales were mostly to foreign publishers regarding print books, print publishing, and that was, relatively speaking, a small portion of revenue. But it is growing, and it has changed, as you say, so that we're not simply talking about what could be a drop in the bucket, but a significant line item in revenue.
Oh, certainly. And even where subsidiary rights income was significant in terms of volume for a publisher, relatively speaking to the revenue being created by the remainder of the publishing operations, it was still a small figure. So in a lot of ways, the amount of attention paid to subsidiary rights and the investment in terms of both staff and technology to support the process just wasn't there in the way that it is today, and certainly in the way that we'd like to see it in the future.
Absolutely. And I guess the point there, too, is that, the focus of publishing has been on creating, acquiring books and publishing them. And so there was a sense that the rights department kind of wasn't creating much, but in fact, really, it is creating value today.
Oh, absolutely. It's creating value. It's creating opportunity. It's creating revenue. It's creating opportunities for both the primary publisher and anyone to whom they might license rights. So it certainly has shifted to the point of being a very a function that is creating value. And also, I think the other thing worth pointing out that from a financial perspective, as we look at the pricing squeeze that has come out of digital, it has forced publishers and should continue to force publishers to revisit how they go about maximizing the revenue from their assets. And obviously the assets are made up of the content that you publish. And you want to get as much out of that as possible. You don't want to miss any opportunities to really leverage what you have and what you've spent a lot of time creating.
Well, right, you are. And, you know, the place to start with all of that is what I was referring to as a rights portfolio audit, Randy. And I guess really what that's about is trying to get some clarity, trying to understand as much as possible what a publisher really has, you know, those assets you were speaking of, what the assets are and what they can do with them. And what this is doing, taking the time to conduct such an audit is to shed some light into areas of the business that might have been in the shadows before. And I suppose you don't always find what you're looking for. You find other things that are unexpected.
Yes, no, absolutely. So, I mean, just that it sounds like a fundamental concept, the idea of just knowing what your inventory of rights are relative to the content that you publish. And yet that's a pretty significant task for most organizations, and some would say in their current state it's not achievable, either because they don't have the resources or because they don't have the tools or the combination of both. So the need to do so is definitely there, more so now than ever. But the ability to do so, the ability to accurately perform that audit and know what do I have rights to, what context do I have those rights, how can I exploit those rights, where have I exploited those rights, where I have licensed on to third parties, what is the status? Are they paying me for what they're supposed to be? Is there anything that's about to revert back to myself or to someone else? So that audit and that inventory is so crucial to what we all do, but yet it's still a very heavy process to get through, and being able to alleviate that pain so that we can really maximize this and understand our situation, I think, is critical.
Right. And, you know, there's a kind of legendary picture of the rights and permissions department in a publisher, you know, a room full of shoeboxes and cartons where all the contracts lie. And you know, probably that's still the case, at least for some of the older relationships that publishers have. But we're making that transition. We're probably still working on that transition, moving from paper to pixels.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a work in progress. I think that I doubt that there are too many organizations who say they are 100% where they need to be. Some are very early in the process of making that transition. Some are further along than others. But all, I think, would agree that there's plenty of work to be done. We're very reliant on paper. A lot of times we don't have all of the paper contracts or interpreting them is challenging or whatever the case might be. You know, a lot of this process is managed by what I've referred to in the past as tribal knowledge. Someone in the organization knows where to find that contract or what the terms of that contract are or who we've sold the rights to, as opposed to a what I'll call a global database where you can look up those things and you aren't as reliant on that tribal knowledge.
Well, you know, we should make sure, too, that people in the audience, the publishers in the audience, don't feel sort of singled out here, because I can tell you, Randy, that I have spoken to a number of author-related organizations over the years for Copyright Clearance Center, and one of the questions I always ask of a group is, so how many of you have a publishing contract? And all of the hands go up. And then I say, and how many of you know where that contract is? And all of the hands go down. So this is something that really is, if you will, common to publishing, whether you're an author or whether you're in the publishing business side of things.
And it's important. And I'll even go a step further, Chris, and I'll go so far as to say that it is it is pervasive even outside of the publishing industry. I mean, we had a case recently, or I shouldn't say case because it didn't become a legal matter, but a situation recently in the entertainment field and in the film entertainment field where someone was writing a script for a particular movie and discovered that they didn't have the rights to use the storyline that they wanted because they didn't own the rights to all of the characters. So they, you know, this is, yeah. Film industry is much bigger than the publishing industry, and even the, and they've been dealing with rights much longer, and even there they have their issues.
Well, indeed, and this is something that, I mean, you mentioned the real-world example of what goes on in Hollywood, but just recently there was a British publisher that got in a bit of a jam after Patrick Modiano of France won the Nobel Prize.
Certainly. So for those who aren't familiar with the story, Patrick Modiano was a writer, a French writer, and had been receiving literary awards in Europe since the late 60s. But most, if not all, of his content was, of his books were published in French, translated into about 30 different languages, but English just happened not to be one of those. So in 2014, Patrick won the Nobel Prize in Literature, and as you can imagine, all of a sudden there was an explosion of interest in his content. And at that time, despite the fact that he had been publishing for nearly 5 decades, despite all of his awards, there just wasn't anything out there in English language, in any English language translations of his titles, with one primary exception, which was one of his titles was available as an ebook. English language ebook, and the publisher was a UK publisher who had translated and published it. And to the embarrassment of a number of different people, both the Patrick's publisher and the UK publisher, they didn't have the rights to publish the ebook, and they had to go out and make a very public statement and pull back the ebook and direct people to the paperback, which they did have the rights to, or someone had the rights to, I should say. So you had a situation there where it was nothing nefarious, nothing deliberate, but a very high profile author, very high profile title that was being published in English as an ebook in English, and the publisher who did so didn't have the rights. And what brought it to light was all of the attention that it got. Now, that was a situation that again led to a lot of embarrassment. It led to a lot of unhappy readers and customers, as you can imagine. But we have to look at this as not just that isolated situation, but the risk that you're creating as an organization when you don't have a very full understanding of what your rights are and what you can and can't publish, and the opportunity cost you're missing when you don't understand the breadth of what you're publishing. So on the one hand, we had a publisher who had published the English translation ebook of something they weren't allowed to do. So that comes with its own set of problems. But at the same time, you had, again, a Nobel laureate whose works were effectively not available in any format in English. So imagine the work that everyone had to do within the publisher to figure out who owned the rights, what do we have the rights to do, and who can actually translate this and publishing in English, all needing to happen very quickly because you want to ride that wave of attention. And I think everyone has to ask themselves, if they were faced with that situation, would you potentially be the publisher who inadvertently published something you aren't supposed to, or could you be the publisher who's scrambling around trying to take advantage of a situation that frankly doesn't happen that often and not having the tools and the resources and the information to do so?
Right, and so Randy, it's really about being prepared and being ready. And the way to do that is to conduct this audit. And what you want to do, you've started to speak about this, is identify where the gaps are and what your needs are. You know, you're not going to, as a publisher, need all the rights, although perhaps in some cases you might, if you are specifically focused on certain marketplaces or certain formats.
Yes, so one of the important things is understanding your market and your target market. So based on what that target market is, what rights should we own, which ones do we typically want to be able to exploit internally, which ones do we want to be able to sell on to third parties, and then be able to do the audit and say, okay, against all of my titles, how do I stand relative to those objectives? Now, some things you won't be able to resolve because you have a contract in place that prohibits you or restricts you from being able to do things in line with your overall strategy. Maybe it's an older contract, whatever the case might be. But what you want to make sure of is that you actually understand what your position is against each one of those titles. Now, when you try to do that, you're going to uncover two things. You're going to uncover gaps in your rights portfolio relative to where you'd like to be, but you're also, very importantly, going to identify gaps in your overall processes, information that you need but can't find, information that you can get to, but it just takes entirely too long, or it's not consistent, or whatever the case might be. So that audit activity is going to uncover business issues, process issues, and systems issues.
Well, and it seems like a really worthwhile endeavor because it's going to lead to some really tough decisions about where you're going to put your investment in what are increasingly, if not scarce resources, at least resources under pressure. So as the publisher goes through these steps, they need to be thinking about the end of that process, which is making decisions about where they're going to invest in infrastructure moving forward. And up to now, that's been spreadsheets and, databases, but we're talking about here something more significant than that.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the challenges, I'm not naive enough to think otherwise, is that when you're talking about parts of organizations that have run fairly well, or at least seemingly run fairly well, without a lot of investment from a systems standpoint, from a resource standpoint, it is difficult to be able to convince people to start investing in that area. So what you need to be doing as you're completing this audit is building a business case, and a business case that aligns with what are the opportunities that we're missing by not having certain systems and processes in place. What are the risks that we're creating by not having certain systems and processes in place? And what is our overall objective as an organization? Can we get there without having these in place? For instance, can we truly be a global publisher? Can we truly create a network of global publishers to help us get our content out into the marketplace? All of those sorts of things need to be part of that business case you're building. So that you can get beyond, I think everyone needs to get beyond just being on spreadsheets and post-it notes. Not everyone needs the same size system above and beyond that, but you do need the proper size system that can support your use cases as an organization, both in terms, again, of being able to maximize opportunities and also to limit your exposure, which we can't overlook.
Right. And the picture you're painting there, Randy Pettway, is one of an increasingly complex publishing world, interlocking networks and global transactions, but also a proliferation of business models and, again, understanding where the publishing house stands on rights prepares you for decision, for making decisions and quick ones about whether you can get into a new business model as it's emerging. So, for example, subscriptions have become the buzz term for 2015 around publishing conferences. People in the book world are thinking about putting their titles into various subscription services. You need to know if you've got the rights to do that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I could do an entire session on business models and the implications for rights, but just using the example you mentioned and one other. So you've got the subscription business model, which, 3 years ago maybe, if that, we weren't even talking really seriously about selling non-scholarly content on a subscription basis. But what's happened is that so many other channels through which people acquire things and particular content are done on a subscription basis that you start to get at them, whether that be music or film, music or broadcast content or whatever the case might be, that now published content is starting to move in that direction. So you have to ask a question, which is, do our contracts and agreements with our licensors and licensees enable us to do that or prohibit us from do that? Have we properly accounted for how everyone is going to be compensated? You know, all of those things need to be taken into consideration. So subscription models are an example. Another thing that's had a lot of buzz over recent years is fragmentation. So what happens when we take a completed book and we start to sell that as a chapter or any other more granular component? And we start to license that content. Well, again, same questions. Can we do so? What are the financial terms? Who are the participants when we do so? What happens when we combine those fragments with other things? So, you know, there's a lot of questions that need to be asked and answered and systems that need to be able to monitor those things. And once you get into that explosion or that proliferation, being able to do that on, again, on spreadsheets, post-it notes, and through tribal knowledge becomes highly problematic, if not impossible.
Right. Well, we're talking right now with Randy Pettway, Executive Vice President, Global Product Strategy for Publishing Technology, about the increasingly complex world of subsidiary rights. And Randy, it's not going to surprise anybody, but in your view, obviously, the key to controlling costs is technology, is automation. Talk briefly about that. Talk about the power of technology today to realize the potential of rights.
Well, yeah, I mean, the technology and the system side of things, it offers the opportunity for tremendous benefit. I don't think anyone have illusions that rights departments are going to grow in size in terms of headcount. You know, are going to grow in size significantly, and but yet the amount of work we're talking about is going to increase. And the way you solve those sorts of problems where you have issues of scale is through the implementation of systems. And that's about efficiency. But systems also help you with opportunity. You're much better off, I believe, if you have a system that can tell you, as you're preparing for Frankfurt, who are all of the people or all of the publishers or rights buyers who expressed an interest in a particular genre last year or in the last 5 years or expressed an interest in a particular author, and to be able to, for instance, schedule your appointments to meet with those people when you go to Frankfurt, and to be able to have an automated system that will help you follow up on any meetings that you might have, to send out any marketing copy that you might have. So the ability to streamline that process and allow you as rights professionals to focus on the art, the relationship, and the knowledge part of it, and let the systems handle the process part of it. Let the system remind you of things to do or automatically do things are key. You know, the ability to be able to have someone, and I'm sure this will come up later in the presentation, have someone be able to come to a website and do a query and automatically find out what rights, what German translation rights you have available across your catalog, you know, in a very simple way that's intuitive and that can be done over the web. You know, little, I shouldn't say little, but things like that not only make you more efficient, but they allow you to seize opportunities much easier. And then speaking to the other side of the equation that I mentioned earlier around risk mitigation, you know, your system should be able to tell you you're about to license rights to someone and you don't have the ability to do so, either because you haven't acquired those rights in the first place or because you've already optioned them to a third party or whatever the case might be. The things that, again, we might rely on tribal knowledge and spreadsheets and post-it notes for now, well, those things can easily be systematized and allow you, again, to make yourself more efficient, to be able to seize opportunities in a much better way and make opportunities known to your, I'll call them customers in a better way, and also to protect yourselves. In the same way that we've seen technology benefit people in other walks of life and business.
Well, yeah, it actually sounds like a fairly efficient way of going about it, Randy Pettway. I like that suggestion a lot.